have a good week, friends.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
Hey friends, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. It's Ben and Ben. It's the Ben and Ben show this morning.
Yes, it is.
At least for this intro. We're excited to bring you this interview. We're in the midst of our spiritual formation series, a little mini series on our podcast, talking about some of the dynamics of spiritual formation. I'm realizing, Ben, that spiritual formation was kind of my gateway drug, so to speak, into like everything I feel like I'm doing now, like kingdom kind of centered ministry, the missional church, like
contemplative
stuff, yeah. like all this stuff. It all started for me with reading Dallas Willard and sort of getting my bell rung a little bit about this is about formation, and this is something that I want to give my life to. So anyway, I'm just realizing that as we go through this series that it was my gateway drug into all things spiritual formation that I'm doing now.
So it opened up the way to Gravity Leadership. Dallas Willard. It always comes back to Dallas Willard for you.
It does.
Buddy.
Yeah.
It always comes back to DW.
His DW. Good old DW. He's rattling around in my brain and will be for a long time, I think. Yeah. So
thank God for him. We need more of him. Lord, give us another Dallas Willard.
Yeah.
Bring us to the next one.
Yes. Yeah. So
this series has been really good, Ben. I wasn't on any of the interviews in this whole series, but I've been listening. I listen to the podcast, particularly when I'm not on it.
I'm not just a creator of the podcast. I'm a fan.
But it's been really good. And I think the timing of it has been really good. And today's episode, I think the timing of it is actually really helpful for us in this season.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's, you know, KJ talks a bit about her experience with chronic pain and kind of having a disease that kind of gives her this unpredictable set of symptoms that she can't really do anything about. And she's written a wonderful book about it that we talk about in this interview where I think it's helpful for us because, many of us have not had that kind of experience, but I think this pandemic is giving us that kind of experience where we're encountering this suffering that we really can't do much about, you know, like all of what we're experiencing, like it's so unknown. And all the, you know, even just the loneliness of not being able to see people in the ways that we normally have been able to see them. It's been a difficult season. I think a lot of us who've never experienced, chronic pain or chronic suffering like that are experiencing something like it.
Yeah. Something similar to it and wanting out right away. Like we just want this to be over immediately.
Right. Right. And we sort of, there's all the kind of the bargaining and the deals we make, you know, like in our heads about it. Whether that's, you know, I've talked with a lot of leaders who are like, I just told myself it would be over by April.
Yeah. A lot of Stockdale paradox, right?
We'll be
done by Christmas.
Yeah. We'll be out by then. And, but it doesn't help, you know? And so anyway, this is a great interview. We're excited to bring it to you. I don't think there's anything to announce, at this point, except maybe, fall's coming up here.
Yeah.
School's starting. And we are, booking workshops for the fall. That is
kind of tentatively, right?
Yes, we are booking tentatively just because it's hard to know what the pandemic is going to do. I just got off the phone with somebody who is wanting to book a workshop for people in his area. But he was saying, I think we're going to do an online workshop. Yeah. The place where this person is just like, I don't think anybody's going to feel confident. Cases are kind of skyrocketing in our area. So we're going to do an online workshop. And so that's a real possibility. I think people are getting used to meeting each other online and being present to each other online, even though it is fatiguing. There's a sense in which you sort of get used to it. And we've found that, you know, with our cohorts, we've been training people online for 5 years. And I know initially a lot of times people are like, well, I don't know if I can connect with people online. And I was realizing, I was like, oh, you know what? You learn to, and you get used to it.
Yeah.
So I think some of that is beginning to happen for people, and it might be, you know, booking an online workshop for your church might be a great way to kind of host a training event.
And online workshops are cheaper too, right? I mean, I think that's
we don't charge as much
and we don't travel. So it makes it a little easier on us. I've got a couple events that I'm scheduled to do in the fall, and they're really wrestling with, do we do this in person or do we want to move it to more of an online format? I think it is an interesting experiment to try out an opportunity to get some of the Gravity Leadership material in the water and have some conversations with folks in your church and a way to gather some people that might be helpful during this season.
Yep, for sure. Yeah. And we are willing to discern that with you too. Just, you know, we are willing to travel if it seems good and safe, you know, to us and to you and to the Holy Spirit, like
to our wives,
to kind of entertain those options as well. And maybe just, you know, take it online as a last minute option at the end of the day. So anyway, check it out. We do one on parenting. We do one called Church in the Wild about being the church in post-Christendom. We could say a lot more about that. We won't today, but I think the pandemic has raised a lot of the post-Christian stuff to the surface. I think a lot of people's tenuous hold on the church has begun to sever. If they just did it because of a, you know, cultural reason, this is a very convenient way to just say, you know what, forget it. So, and then we do another one on the Enneagram. So
boot camps too. Boot camps. We do boot camps online also. Yeah.
So we'll put links in the show notes to all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Friends, enjoy this interview with KJ Ramsey. Okay, friends, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our guest today is KJ Ramsey. KJ, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It is great to have you. KJ, for our listeners, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, what you get up to in a day.
Yeah, well, I am a therapist and an author. I, in any given day, do a matter of things from seeing clients to writing small Instagram posts to get under people's skin to going outside and trying to enjoy the beauty in my neighborhood.
Great.
Just a little bit. Well,
yeah, I love that. Thank you for doing that. We're going to get to the book that you've written here in just a moment, but I'm wondering what kinds of Instagram posts you write to get under people's skins. What can you give us an example? This is kind of a hobby of, especially Matt's recently.
Yeah.
Not Instagram, but Facebook. But what do you mean by that? What do you write that gets under people's skin?
Well, you know, as we're recording this, we're in the month of June. And so a lot of what I've been writing is trying to get people to see that sin is not just an individual issue, but a systemic, sweeping brokenness that has touched every part of our existence. And, you know, recently I received a review on my book that was like, you don't take sin seriously. And really what I read that as was, you don't take sin to be just about an individual problem that needs to be fixed. It's like, I'm finding a lot of people are very uncomfortable with the idea that there is a sweeping systemic brokenness that touches everything. And that larger view of sin actually might be a starting place for a lot of grace and repentance and healing. So that's one place that I'm trying to get under people's skin. And I tend to, I don't know why it doesn't, the things I say don't tend to frustrate people quite as much as I expect for some reason, but it's just interesting. It's interesting being on this side, and sometimes it does, but often it doesn't, which is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is fascinating. I mean, that's, I'm fascinated that somebody could read your book and think that you don't take sin seriously. That is,
I know, right? I talk about sin a lot in the book.
Yeah, you do. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's maybe we'll come back around to that. We'll see.
Yeah.
But the book is that we want to talk about today is called This Too Shall Last, Finding Grace When Suffering Lingers. So obviously a play on This Too Shall Pass, which is a good word of hope, but maybe oftentimes is used as a false hope. That eventually everything's going to be okay if you just pray hard enough, or you know, that kind of a thing. So anyway, we'll get into this. This is a great book, KJ. I'm really glad that our mutual friend Chuck DeGroat connected us. Chuck's been on the podcast a couple times.
Yes.
Maybe we could start here. You introduce yourself as a recovering idealist. And so I'd love to hear you unpack that a little bit. Maybe share some of your story. Yeah, of how you came to see yourself as a recovering idealist and what you mean by that.
Yeah, so I tend to see the world through the lens of what it could be and what is missing.
Oh.
And yeah.
I resonate with that. Yeah.
Yeah, in Enneagram language, I'm a four. You know, it took a long time to realize that. But over the course of my adulthood, particularly, I got sick with this disease that I write about a lot in the book, ankylosing spondylitis. I got sick at 20. And getting sick pushed me into this experience of life is not ideal. And no matter what I do about it, I am going to be met with the chasm between what I want and what I long for and what I have and what I experience. And so I say I'm a recovering idealist because there's this part of me that always is longing for wholeness that I believe is a beautiful reflection of who God is. And it's a desire planted in my soul that I think God has to light up the world and the spheres of influence around me. But it also is something that can keep me judgmental, and it can keep me focused on the future or the past instead of being willing to be where I am, because often where I am is not ideal.
Yeah. Yeah. So you find yourself, the idealism then is knowing, so there's a good part about it in that, in the sense that you know that there is something better than what is, right? There's this hope that propels us into the future that allows us to, you know, live in the midst of unideal circumstances. Otherwise, you know, life would have no meaning, right?
Yeah.
So there's a goodness to that, but I hear you saying that, there was a tendency for you to not ever want to be in a situation that was less than ideal because of that. And so there was this temptation to look to the future to say, man, if we can just do something about this, then we can get to this better place. Or to look to the past to say, well, wasn't it great when I was a teenager and I wasn't sick? Or
yeah, something like that. The state of longing itself can keep us from being present to our actual lives.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's been a ongoing process of encountering my constant state of longing and letting it prompt me to come back to the present and experience the peace of God here and now. Because
even in the midst of suffering.
Right. Because if I'm always in a state of longing, I'm going to miss that Christ is with me now.
Yeah, KJ, what you're describing, I think, is common to our human experience, right? So being learning contentment without becoming complacent, or learning to be present without also like quelling hope or longing or desire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what you're naming, I think, is you learn it differently than I learn it, but it's what it means to be human. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. So, and this is a big part of your story. I mean, you tell the story in the book quite a bit, which is really helpful. So suffering isn't an academic pursuit for you.
No.
You know, what subject shall I write about? No, is you were sort of thrust into this world through this disease that you were diagnosed with when you were 20. I'm interested to know, I mean, the subtitle of your book is Finding Grace When Suffering Lingers. And we're in this series on formation, kind of a little mini series on our podcast. And a lot of times, spiritual formation is oftentimes framed as something that you do, mm-hmm. right? It's something that I can practice. And it is, right? I'm thinking of, Dallas Willard, I think in The Divine Conspiracy, talked about the golden triangle of spiritual formation or spiritual transformation or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember the three elements of the triangle for him were the work of the Holy Spirit, obviously, is present, has to be, God has to do this work in us. We're not pulling ourselves up by our own bootstraps, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then there are intentional practices that we engage in, and those are, you know, fasting and prayer and solitude and silence and sort of the ancient practices that the church has always said, these are locations where you can meet God. Mm-hmm. But then the third element of his triangle was the circumstances of our life, of our actual life.
Yeah.
And we have to learn how to meet God in those circumstances, or else we'll always be pushing away our encounter to some ideal time in the future or some other, like when things are different, there'll be this place where I can meet with God. And I thought about that as I was reading your book, because you know, oftentimes we think of it as something I do. My spiritual formation is something that I do. But your book is basically about what to do when you can't do anything that you would want to do. You know what I mean?
It's
when your circumstances bring suffering, like what do you do to find grace in the midst of that? And I'm struck by the fact that suffering doesn't automatically bring grace into our lives.
Mm-mm.
And no. I'm curious about what you've learned. I mean, some people become intensely bitter when suffering, you know, encounters them. So it's, in one sense, it's a dangerous thing to encounter. But what have you discovered about finding grace in the midst of suffering? What have you needed to do in order to avoid the pitfall of bitterness or, you know, whatever else might come when you're experiencing suffering like you have?
Yeah, well, I appreciate that we just talked about me being a recovering idealist and how we tend to get oddly stuck forecasting into the future or trying to make sense of the past, because this is really the place that we have to go with suffering is this willingness to be in the present. And I think as Christians, we tend to avoid the present through our theological explanations about what God might be trying to teach us or how we could grow from this experience. Actually, that is just an escape from the pain of where we are. And the place that I have found grace over and over again, presently, not just 10 years ago or 11 years ago when I first got sick, but over and over again, is when I am willing to set aside what thing do I need to learn, or what is the purpose of this pain that I have, and I can actually attend to my current situation, my current pain, as though I am loved by God and united to Christ already. And therefore, Christ is present by his Spirit here. Therefore, my pain in any given day is a place to bear witness to Jesus and his presence. And I find that we have to be willing to set aside the spiritual, even good desire to understand our suffering in order to even physiologically be able to attend to our lives with that kind of attention.
Wow. Oh, yeah. So even the seeking for a purpose in my pain is a distraction from the presence of God in my pain.
It often is.
Yeah. The finding God's presence is different from talking about what I'm learning or finding some sort of purpose or why is this happening to me, mm-hmm. or even making efforts to correct it, which that's a good thing as well, right? I mean, it's good to...
Yeah,
you know,
we don't
attempt to be, you know,
I'm on medications, right? Like right. I'm not just accepting that yeah. I have this degenerative disease and yeah. it's like, I'm going to let it take its course and I'm going to die mm. earlier than I need to. No, yeah. I'm on aggressive treatments because it matters. God does not have for us to look at suffering and not attend to it and, yeah. and try to bring comfort and, mm-hmm. and, you know, improve our lives. Yeah. Yes. So that is not entirely a bad thing to seek relief.
Right, right. But, I mean, this is why we go to doctors. We, you know, healing is good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it often becomes an escape hatch from yeah. being where we are
yes.
and finding that God really is here.
Yeah, so KJ, that provokes a question for me. I mean, all suffering is relative, right? So there's no way of saying like, hey, somebody just lost their mom tragically and they have it worse than your mm-hmm. your disease, or your disease is better than somebody else's, you know, whatever. So suffering is relative. We all experience it how we experience it. Maybe it's personal, right, more than relative.
Mm-hmm.
I guess then for you, like, how do you hold that? How do you practice what you're talking about? I think we have this incessant need to know why, to try to figure things out, right?
Yeah.
To get
yeah.
to the bottom of things. And if we can get our heads around it, then everything will be okay. And what you're saying is maybe just hit pause on getting your head around it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do that?
Yeah, well, very practically, I remember my body. So I think we tend to get stuck in the place of explanation because we are the inheritors of a vast dichotomy of devaluing our bodies and overvaluing our minds. Hmm. And so by thinking that we need to understand and that understanding is where we will come to experience comfort. We have as Christians spent most of our lives not paying attention to our physicality. And if anything, not just not paying attention, but dismissing it mm-hmm. and calling yeah. and demonizing it yes. as the source of our sin.
Yeah.
And so I think first and foremost, there's a lot there and there's a lot to unpack as to why our bodies actually are good and why and how our bodies are giving us constant signals to pay attention to through which we could respond to the God who loves us. What do you?
Yeah. Are you referencing, I think I hear what you're saying, but I want to make sure I'm tracking. Are you referencing sort of the confluence we sometimes do whenever we read the flesh in scripture mm-hmm. to think
yep.
about our physical body?
Yeah, right. So I'm referencing that, and I'm saying we have totally gotten that wrong.
Yeah,
and we tend to have a spirituality that's very informed by Gnosticism, mm-hmm. perhaps more than a whole person embrace that says God so cared about the human experience that God became one of us with a body.
Mm.
So there's a lot to unpack there, but to go back to your practicality of what yeah. you asked, how do you do this? So I remember my body is part of who I am, and it is the first place where I can remember the physical presence of Jesus is real. Mm. And so I shift from trying to understand my suffering, my pain, the purpose, all of it, to pausing and simply breathing. I allow myself to stop and to inhale and exhale. Remember that I carry the breath of God within me because I am united to Christ. The Spirit, the breath of God is in me. And that's where I start to get real practical.
I love that. That is so practical. Matt, I think you're muted.
I did mute myself because I'm clearing my throat. Yeah. And I just was saying that I think people are getting saved right now. Like what you just said is profound.
Yes.
We are so used to treating suffering, pain, sadness as hurt, as something to be avoided and eliminated and fixed. And what you're saying is, how about you just face it and let it be?
How because about you because you might see the face of God there.
Wah! Mm. All right.
Yes.
With every head bowed and every eye closed.
Yep. Just do an altar call.
I think this is the good news of affluent, insulated culture who has forgotten what their pain and suffering is for.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
You've forgotten what it's for.
Yeah. Yeah. KJ, you say in your book, here's a quote. I mean, the unspoken story of Western culture is that suffering is a problem we can avoid or annihilate if we work hard enough. And that just keeps us trapped in that sort of mind world where, you know, the idealism, right, rather than grounded and centered in our bodies, which is actually where we encounter the Lord.
Right.
That's where
He's
present. Yeah.
So we think that we're living by faith when we try to make sense of our suffering, but really we're actually just further living in the story of self-sufficiency. But the gospel is that we don't have to do that anymore. The gospel is that Christ has made Himself present to us by His Spirit. And that requires surrendering that we might be able to understand the suffering that comes in our lives.
Yeah. It's almost like we need to get over the unspoken, unexamined belief that I'm going to encounter God once I can figure this out.
Yeah.
Like that's not Shangri-La. That's not the promised land.
No, that never will satiate us.
Yeah.
It never will. And also it's not a one-time thing what you're describing of getting over it. It's the human mind. Pride is part of our problem, and we are going to want to understand and make sense over and over. I come there again and again in my daily life. Mm-hmm. And the good news of that is that over and over again, as I surrender my desire to understand, and I instead am willing to be where I am and who I am in this body and in this life, I get to encounter Jesus again and again.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
I think oftentimes when we're not suffering or when we're experiencing the affluence, as Matt said earlier, there's this sort of, I guess I think about it like C.S. Lewis, you know, talks about how we're like little kids making mud pies in a slum because we can't imagine what this invitation is to have a holiday at the sea.
Yeah.
Where we sort of, it's like a simulation of goodness. It's like a simulation of a good life that we end up sort of lulling ourselves to sleep thinking, oh yeah, this is fine. But suffering, the grace in suffering can be that we're forced into this situation where, you know what, I need to find grace in something other than my circumstances and something other than finding an explanation for why this is happening or how this all works. And it has to be, it's almost like the ultimate test of the gospel to be like, okay, if God can meet me here, then maybe this is true. You know, maybe the gospel is true.
I would add something to that list, Ben, even not just answers Mm-hmm. And I forget the first thing you said because my brain is going a million miles a minute.
Just affluence, where we numb ourselves out.
Answers. And then I would say like comfort. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, how many times have you prayed that this chronic illness would go away, KJ?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And have other people pray for you. And so there's a way to hitch our wagon onto like the healing of this thing that's making me suffer. And if I get that, then I can know God's presence and power and pleasure and all the P words. But what you're saying, KJ, is like there's actually something that you can experience of God's presence and power in the midst of an unanswered prayer.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that I actually think there is an aspect to God's presence that you only can experience in the midst of unanswered prayers and things you can't understand. Like the peace that passes understanding. You have to be in that place where you can't understand something in order to encounter that peace.
Yeah.
So are we willing to go to that place? Yeah. Are we willing to be there? And if we are, we might encounter something that's stunning and changes who we are.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I think of another Dallas Willard quote. I think of them often. He was really influential for me. But he says that, you know, God's address is the end of your rope. When you get to the end of your rope, you're blessed because that's where God lives. But I oftentimes think about it to say, like, how good then for those who can't hold on? How good for those who are unable to climb?
Yeah.
You know, in some ways, you get there quicker when you're in a situation that you can't do anything about, you know, that they're, when they're suffering.
Yep. So, absolutely.
Even while holding on to, I don't hear you abandoning, you know, praying for healing.
No.
I don't hear you abandon. You're not stopping to take stopping taking medicine. Like you're seeking healing, in any way you can find it, and also finding grace in the midst of that prayer not being answered.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Maybe KJ, we can go on from there. You said you start with breathing. You remember your body, but I know that a big part of your book is talking about relationships, finding grace in the midst of relationships. So this is a quote from page 73 that I really liked. How we come to believe, trust, and love is a physical process. Being rooted and grounded in love requires relationships to guide our embodied relational minds to renewed faith in the God who is good. So relationships are required, not peripheral. Can you talk a little bit about how relationships of love come into finding grace in the midst of suffering?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to start with the acknowledgement that we are all relational and that from the moment we are born, we need one another. And I bring that up first because I think just like we devalue our physicality, we overlook our relationality, and we tend to see our dependency, our need for one another, as something to get past when perhaps it's actually the heart of what it means to be human. And so I just want to bring that up first because
you can.
There has to be a willingness to reexamine our elevation of individualism and self-sufficiency as the goal of being human, first and foremost, if we're going to be at all willing to try to offer one another grace in relationships and suffering.
Yes, I think that's so important. I'm glad you mentioned that because I think there's a shame that we all carry around. And this is a part of our Western inheritance, right? So we've got this idolization of comfort and ease, but also this idolization of autonomy.
Yes.
And so we carry around, if I'm in a situation where I need you,
then I am bad. Like this,
yes, I've done something like this is clearly not the best thing for me. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and the gospel, again, is our need is responded to by God, and need is the birthplace of grace. Mm. We have to acknowledge our need and our dependency in order to receive this great love.
Yeah.
And that gets to be expressed and played out in our everyday lives, in every place that we experience our weakness and our lack of ability to get ourselves everything that we need to survive and thrive.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So relationships are a big part of this then. A big part of how we experience the grace is realizing we're relational creatures. It's not bad or deficient or second best even to need others to love us in order to, so basically in order for us to actually experience the love of God, maybe we need a person to love us.
You have to have a person to love you. Yeah. So in order to experience God as loving and present, we really do have to see love modeled to us. And part of that means also we have to experience the risky, scary state of needing someone and having to try to trust someone that they might actually care about you and respond to your needs.
Yeah.
That's where we start. That's where faith starts.
Yeah. And they also may let us down and we may be disappointed.
Yeah.
And we might have to navigate that. And yeah.
You know, I'm reading a brain science book right now all about this. And they talk about our default mental network. And the DMN, which doesn't just roll off the tongue, but our default mental network is what happens to your brain when you aren't actively putting it on something. So when you're not actively taking your attention or focus, externalizing it, and you let it go, where does your brain go? And it talks about, this book talks about how it's your earliest relationships that determine whether you have a like peaceful default mental network, or they call it a savage default mental network.
Mm-hmm.
I know. It's pretty. I just was like, yeah. Anyway, but I'm reminded that like our relationships are so important to us that they shape the way our brain rests.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And really good news is that it's possible for our brains to change. So it's called earned secure attachment. Throughout our lifespan, we have the capacity to learn how to trust. So even if you, like me, perhaps had some really chaotic, painful early experiences with caregivers in your family, and that makes it hard for you to just on a everyday basis, like be in a state of peace. You're maybe always in a state of hypervigilance of I need to protect myself. It is possible to shift from self-protection as your natural state of being to trust and peace being what you experience every day.
Yes.
And that happens only through experiencing another person as safe and empathetic and attuned to you and your story.
This is great. My mind is going in all kinds of different directions. I'm trying to figure out which questions to ask here. I want to come back to, and maybe we could end the interview in just a moment with a question about how to, one of your chapters is called The Sacrament of Bearing Witness. And I want to talk about how to bear witness to somebody's pain, how to talk. So, you know, a lot of our listeners are Christian leaders and they probably encounter people who are in pain. They also, you know, have their own pain. But a lot of people are working with people who are in pain. Yeah. It might be really helpful to hear from you, like what some of the unhelpful things to hear are and what does it mean to bear witness to pain? But before that, I'd love to ask you if you have any thoughts about this. You may not, but it's just an interesting thing to me. I think one of the most, we're in the midst of a global pandemic, and one of the most pernicious parts of this pandemic, the most insidious things about it is that it is disrupting our ability to be in relationships.
Yeah.
Right. So it's disrupting our ability to be in physical proximity to each other. You talked about we're embodied beings and relationship is a physical process. And here we are on Zoom every day trying to imitate this physical process that, you know, and I've read some great helpful articles that talk about why it's so tiring for us. Our brains are working overtime to try to do what they normally do in person that we can't do via screens, even the best HD video screens. So I don't know if you have thoughts on that, like what the pandemic, like what we would normally do in a time of global crisis like this is to be with each other, to eat with each other, to comfort one another, to hug one another. But that's the very thing that seems to be, you know, like we don't want to do that because that spreads a virus. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. That seems like there's a tension that we're living with right now that is like anti-human.
It absolutely is. I hope and pray that this experience of physical distance from one another is creating a new sight of how important our bodies are and how powerful our presence is with one another. And so I hope that the absence of being with one another is where longing can be good, is creating a longing for what we really were made for. Because absolutely, I think we're tasting just how important physical presence is by not having it.
Right. Well, in some ways then it's a form of suffering.
It is.
Like we're being deprived of something that we would normally take for granted, and it's causing this suffering in us. And I think you stated it beautifully that that's the possibility for us, is to find the grace of like, oh, I didn't know how much I needed people, but I really, really do.
Yes. And this is one of the largest graces of suffering, is that it is always asking us to pay attention. And so that is my prayer, is that this physical absence is helping us pay attention to something that has always been at the heart of being human, but we have been too hurried to value.
And I think it's been helpful for me to remember that just sitting in that pain, like is where I meet God, you know, not in a Netflix binge or another glass of wine or whatever else we might use to kind of numb the pain, right? But to realize, oh, there's a reason this hurts. I was made for relationships. There's a reason this doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. And it's okay for me to just sit in this longing and this absence and this pain and be with the Lord in it.
Right. And I think that, you know, what you're explaining is really in a condensed season what my experience of the last 11 years has been, because so much of my suffering is being so sick that I can't leave bed or that I can't work at times. And so there is a often suffering in all its various forms, not just diseases like mine, but it will remove us and put us on the margins of community and relationship. And the goodness there is that on the margins, you start to see what you really need. And Jesus always comes to the margins. He's always making his way to the people on the edges. And so even here in the middle of a pandemic, when we feel sidelined by this suffering, Jesus is always coming toward us. If we're willing to sit there on the sideline and feel the pain, we might see that he's sitting there too. And we can experience physically his presence even here.
Yes. That's great, KJ. Again, you're giving me so much to think about. I think I'd love to maybe wrap things up here. So when you are suffering, you're feeling this and realizing I need to believe the good news that Christ meets me in my marginalization. Towards the end of the book, you talk about the sacrament of bearing witness. And you say this, suffering must be shared, witnessed, and heard to be experienced as the fertile soil of Christ's kingdom, the ground where God comes to find and remake us. And so I'm thinking now about when I am encountering someone else who's suffering, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not the suffering one. I'm encountering somebody else who's suffering. And, you know, we're recording this right in the middle of worldwide protests over the death of George Floyd,
yeah,
over racial systemic injustice. And it strikes me that what I am doing or trying to do as a white person, right, who has not directly experienced this kind of suffering in marching or protesting or posting a tweet, you know, like you talked about this at the beginning of the call, yeah, like posting your Instagram stories to get under people's skins. But part of what I see you doing there is bearing witness. You're, yes, bearing witness to someone else's suffering. And thereby, I think there's like you said, that's the fertile ground where Christ can bring healing, that sort of thing. So I guess I'd love to hear you say a bit more about that. As somebody who has experienced suffering, what has been helpful for others? Like what has created that fertile ground? How do you bear witness to someone's suffering instead of, man, all the mistakes we can make when we're trying, mm-hmm, to help somebody feel better or listen to someone's pain?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, it's such an important question. And one of the answers comes back to what we've already been talking about, which is the willingness to shift from making sense of the senseless to being present to a person's pain. And so when we encounter suffering and we encounter stories that are full of loss and injustice, we come at them just like we come at our own, with this desire to understand it. And part of that is our desire to control it. We don't like how it feels to see injustice and to see that there are human beings who are treated like less than even a dog. We don't like that. And so we want to control the vulnerability of seeing that. And we often control the vulnerability by trying to explain it away, yeah, or ask, yeah, God to take it away.
Yeah.
But what if we could, yeah, lay aside that self-sufficiency? That's us trying to be the savior. What if we could lay that aside and say, this person is valued infinitely by God, and I could see Jesus here in them. I could bear witness to them and their story and their suffering and see Christ, yeah, is present.
Yeah.
So I think it's the same shift that the sufferer themselves has to make in a willingness to be where we are and to listen, to believe what we hear and not have to have an explanation for it. That's where it starts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to highlight this. Like, you're describing, I think, an important part of not only tending to people who are suffering, but even more present for our culture moment, being with people whose experiences of things like the police and the law and living in America are different than maybe our own. And that's, and you describe it as bearing witness, but it's actually just seeing people. You know, I think of Hagar when she's sent away with Ishmael and she's basically dying in the desert and sets her son aside to die. And she, God reveals himself to her as the God who sees me, she says.
Yeah.
You know, you're the God who sees me. He bears witness to her suffering. And there really isn't much he does there other than just see her. There's a sense in which she's just seen, and that changes her. And so I think about, right? I think about, KJ, as you're describing this, about, I hear a lot of, we don't have to go all the way down this road. I know Ben's trying to wrap this up. He's got important online multi-universe video games to play, probably. But there's a sense.
No, I'm just going to post some Instagram stuff to get under people's skin.
Oh, okay.
Right, right, right.
But there's a sense in which I hear this criticism. I've heard this criticism to me of like, hey, you talk about the suffering that Black people are going through in our country, and don't you think this just reinforces a victim mentality that doesn't set them up well for success. Now, this is something somebody said to me asynchronously in a written communication. And what I hear you saying, KJ, is a response to that. That when your victimhood is denied, or you're gaslighted and told your suffering and pain is all in your head, or you deserve it, or
it's not that bad,
you can't begin to heal from your pain until somebody sees it and speaks the truth about it and bears witness to it with you.
Yep. Yeah. Dismissed pain is unhealed pain.
Yeah. Yeah, and so there maybe is a temptation to get stuck in your pain, you know, for your pain to swallow you or for your pain to consume you. I mean, maybe that's, you know, that's
maybe a different book. I think actually that happens more because of our communities not being willing to see our pain. So I've experienced over and over again people with that anxious desire for me to not be so identified by my suffering. And I think that there's maybe some goodness in that hope for people to not get stuck in stories and be victimized by them. But I actually think that people get stuck in stories of suffering and get stuck seeing themselves as victims when our communities are unwilling to bear witness and name the gravity of what they are experiencing.
Because
we're the ones that keep people stuck in their suffering.
Yes.
All right. So it's actually like
it's a the wrong warning. Fear.
It's a warning against the thing that will keep the warning from coming true.
Right.
Yeah. Like, stop being so anxious about people getting stuck. God is the one that holds us in his hand. Do you trust him? Do you trust God to care for his people?
Yeah.
Like, just stop being so afraid of what's going to happen to people in their suffering.
Can I have my Bible now? And did he?
Matt's getting saved. No, KJ, that's so good. That's so good. That the very thing that we fear would happen if we see someone is what we're causing when we refuse to see them.
Yes.
Because they're the only ones that they're like, no, I'm suffering. They have to reassert it, assert it again, because nobody else will.
Right.
Nobody else will be there with them.
Yeah. So it all comes back to trust.
Yeah.
Can we encounter one another's pain with trust, that even though we cannot make the pain go away, we are loved by a God who can put every part of our stories into a greater story of love that ends in joy. Can we trust that? So every time we come to see one another in suffering and injustice, we have an opportunity to trust and to sit there not being able to fix it, but to see Christ as present and pulling us into a pattern of redemption.
Amen.
Yeah.
One of our axioms, we have kind of seven core axioms that really are the foundational kind of beliefs or thoughts that kind of guide everything we do. Mm-hmm. And one of them is that God is so real that he meets us in reality, that he doesn't want to meet us in our dreams and our idealism, our regrets about the past, but he meets us right now. He meets us right here in our reality. And so I hear you saying that when we bear witness to those who are suffering, when it's a bad reality that we have to meet the Lord in, that we're actually participating in the work of redemption with the Lord. We're actually participating in Christ's kingdom just by seeing someone who's suffering, just by bearing witness to it and saying, thank you for sharing that with me. I'm sorry. This is bad. And there's a reason it hurts.
And that itself is redemptive. And that itself is what even rewires our brains to be able to trust that we are loved by the kind of God who is steadfast and who sacrificed his own body for our sake, We learn how to trust that is true when we see another person in front of us saying, I see you. Mm. You matter. Yeah. That is how redemption happens. Oh,
yeah. It's beautiful. KJ, thank you so much for spending this time with us. I think half the reason I do this podcast is to be able to hear words of good news and healing and life and hope from people I interview. I just, you know, it's like, it's amazing. I get to, you know, like, this is my job. This is awesome. Yeah,
it is. It is awesome. KJ, you're awesome. You. Thanks for telling it like it is today. Thanks for helping us learn about this.
Thank you so much. This has been a joy.
Yes. The book is called This Too Shall Last, Finding Grace When Suffering Lingers. We'll put a link in the show notes to it. KJ, if people want to reach out to you or connect with you online or something like that, how can they do that?
Yeah, you can find all of my writing at kjramsey.com. And then I'm across social media at kjramseywrites.
KJ Ramsey. And that's RAMSEY, as I learned.
Yes.
When I accidentally wrote your name wrong initially. So yes, kjramsey.com. KJ, thanks again. Appreciate you being with us.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebby, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online, as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.